This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Stuck in traffic.
So I was driving around this weekend, which I generally don't do, but I had an event in Bellevue for a sponsor, Evolve180WeightLoss.com, and I went down there and I noticed on the drive over that the 520 bridge coming back into Seattle from Bellevue was closed for some kind of construction work that they were doing. And I immediately decided things are going to... I just knew things were going to be bad on the drive back into Seattle after the event. And I was right.
Of course you were.
I was 100% right. But I didn't realize that they had already decided to close 99. So I'm coming back on I-90 because that's the only other way that I can get... I suppose I can go 4 or 5 and go all the way around. But we weren't going to do that. So I went through I-90. And I-90 to I-5 was at a standstill. My phone told me it was going to take 12 minutes in a delay, but it was... No, you guys were off at Google by probably about 40 minutes. So I decided to... Oh, I know. I will cut through Soto and Pioneer Square area, get on the tunnel, which they haven't told yet, so it's fine. And I was using the company vehicle, so if you want to tell me, I don't really care. So I'm going down there, and there's more traffic there. You want to know why? Because the 99... tunnel was closed. They decided to close it so they can test the tolling system. What did I say about a month ago?
That
toll wasn't going to work.
It wasn't going to work.
Yeah. That they were going to find some problems. And lo and behold, they found some problems. Now, the tolling officially hits us on November 9th. You're going to get hit with a fee as high as $2.25 for the privilege of avoiding traffic in Seattle by getting stuck in traffic underneath Seattle. And they found out their system doesn't quite work as is, and they ended up charging people incorrectly. King 5 says flexible pylons were installed over the weekend on their side of the exit ramp to prevent drivers from creating a second lane of traffic during periods of heavy traffic. The pylons were added after the Washington State Department of Transportation noticed inconsistencies with toll readings at the northbound off-ramp that, quote, created the potential to charge vehicles incorrectly. They say this only occurred when drivers began lining up on the shoulder of the ramp, creating a second lane. The tolling equipment only functions properly when traffic is in a single lane. So it sounds like people were moving lanes because traffic was so bad that they couldn't do anything but get into that other actual lane. And that created the problem with the charging here. So in other words, they're forcing the bad traffic to stay bad in order to take money from you.
Yeah. You're going to pay $2.99 to sit in that lane and not move, even left or right. You're not merging.
You're just... It's $2.25.
Excuse me. Fair.
I mean, we don't have to...
Excuse me.
It's already bad enough. We don't have to add sense to that. But then I started to think about, as I was dealing with this traffic and started to reflect on what other people were going to do, because I'm almost never going to actually take 99. And if I do, it's to bypass Seattle. This is, when we say bad policies of Seattle spread, this is kind of what I mean. Like, bad ideas don't just exist in Seattle. They end up impacting you. Because let's say you live in Edmonds and you're trying to get down to SeaTac, whether you're going to the airport or maybe you work in the general area. Or maybe you live in Des Moines, but you're trying to get to Lynnwood for work or vice versa. You want nothing to do with Seattle. You're literally going underneath Seattle to bypass it. And yet you're getting charged a fee to avoid the city who came up with this really bad policy with WashDOT. Because, of course, they could have allowed an exit or entrance in downtown Seattle via 99. They chose not to do that. That's how you get screwed. That's how you get screwed. So now I'm going to do another bit of Jason Tells the Future. Although the clocks in here are different and all screwed up, so I don't know what time is it.
3:08.
3:08. Okay. 3:08. On October 14th, this is my prediction. The tolling will not start on November 9th. Write that down. No, that's the Book of Wisdom. Put it in the Book of Future Predictions. Jason tells... Yeah, that one.
Well,
the one with the sparkler.
No, I told you I was going digital with this one. This one's
mine.
Oh,
you're doing the... Okay.
I have a Google Doc. This is your third Jason Tells the Future.
But then we can't have glitter on it.
I know, but... This is the best way, and I'm going to mold you away from these stupid books that are all over this stupid studio.
But there's glitter. I just want glitter.
I will send you a GIF of glitter. Will that work?
Yeah, that's fine. but at least do the font that you're typing on, like rainbow colors. Let's jazz it up a little bit. Come on.
Okay. This is going to get published.
Good. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So now that Adam Schiff was caught in a massive lie, he's saying the whistleblower may not need to testify. The whistleblower wasn't part of the calls between President Trump and the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky. Yet the whistleblower came forward with what seemed like a very, very detailed complaint of the wrongdoing. How this person found out this information, we don't know. Someone might want to ask that whistleblower. Adam Schiff, the Democrat in charge of the committee doing the investigating in this regard, he pretended he didn't know that this whistleblower complaint was coming. He lied about it to the media, including MSNBC, when he was asked about it. Oh, we had no idea. I didn't know. I had no contact. We had no contact. That was wrong. His office personally had contact with this whistleblower. Now, suddenly, despite saying it was important to interview the whistleblower, Adam Schiff goes on Face the Nation and say, well, maybe we don't need to do that at all.
Our primary interest right now is making sure that that person is protected. Indeed, now there's more than one whistleblower that they are protected. And given that we already have the call record, we don't need the whistleblower who wasn't on the call to tell us what took place during the call. We have the best evidence of that. We do want to make sure that we identify other evidence that is pertinent to the withholding of the military support, the effort to cover this up by hiding this in a classified computer system. We want to make sure that we uncover the full details about the conditionality of either the military aid or that meeting with the Ukraine president. It may not be necessary to take steps that might reveal the whistleblower's identity to do that.
Oh.
And we're going to make sure we protect that whistleblower.
It's kind of funny. Because this also means, his sudden position also means that we won't be able to ask the whistleblower specifically about how much contact he or she had with Adam Schiff's office. Oh, that's so weird. It's weird how that works, huh? And then, of course, I love how he throws out a talking point that has already been dismissed by the Washington Post, by the way. So, we got to find out why he put this call in a classified system. They put all the calls in a classified system because they didn't like the way the leaks were happening so often. That was literally in the Washington Post about a month ago. But he understands that the vast majority of people who are covering this story, who are following this story, aren't paying attention to that. They're not reading the Washington Post. Now, I do. Oh, God, I do. And so I was able to find this stuff out. This is a scam. Understand it's not in his best interest for the American people to hear directly from this whistleblower. I believe in protecting whistleblowers, 100%. How about you then do the interview behind closed doors? Do it privately. Allow members of Congress on the Republican side to ask some basic questions about, hey, how did you hear about this call? Because you weren't in on it. How'd you hear about it? Who helped you write the whistleblower complaint? I'm just kind of curious. How much contact did you have with Adam Schiff? It doesn't mean anything that he or she's going to tell us will be explosive. It doesn't mean that it'll prove a conspiracy. But there are some very clear and reasonable questions, I think. Adam Schiff is having a whole bunch of these interviews being done behind the scenes, behind closed doors, confidential, so we don't have access to them. Why can't you do that with the whistleblower? Because he doesn't want certain questions asked. Because he knows by going down this pathway, the way that they're doing it, he's able to have all of the ability to go on TV and claim, use this whistleblower to go after the president without Republicans being able to point to anything that might shine a bit of a spotlight to make us a little bit more suspicious of some of the information. It is a smart strategy. It is transparent. It's very clear what Adam Schiff is trying to do and how hypocritical he is. And now it's kind of on the reporters out there, the ones that get to talk with Adam Schiff, to push him. And they didn't really push him all that much. From Face the Nation, he gets away with a lie because they like what it is he's pushing. They love what he's pushing, so they give him a pass. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. We're actually live streaming on video this entire hour on our Twitch channel. It's a website that basically allows for a webcam in the studio. If you want to check out how we perform this show, you have until the end of the hour to text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770. I want to get 50 people. That's it. I start small, baby steps. 50 people at one time watching the video, and I'll continue to keep it live. How about that? You have until the end of the hour. I'll be watching it because I like looking at myself. Text VIDEO to 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, you can follow me on Instagram. Just fire up the Instagram app and search for the screen name Jason Rants. It's all one word. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
I gotta say, I will watch all the Seahawks matches, but I don't necessarily enjoy every moment of it. And yet, this last matchup against the Cleveland Browns, very good match. Just from a perspective of a casual fan, I was fascinated by it. So let's get a look, a recap, a piece of analysis with Peyton's 2-Minute Drill.
Start your watches and off we go because it's time for the 2-Minute Drill.
Mayfield looks that way, throws the slant, bobble, it's intercepted! KJ Wright, the ball is tipped off of the receiver, Hilliard! KJ Wright is right there, he reaches out! The Browns fans are heading for the exits!
The Hawks started off incredibly slow yesterday, falling behind 20-6 to the Cleveland Browns. After settling in, Russell Wilson started doing Russell Wilson-type things, finding all the right passes, hitting his checkdowns, and Chris Carson was able to rush for 100-plus yards on the ground for the third straight week. That is the productivity that Seattle Seahawks are looking week in, week out of their running backs.
I just loved the way we hung tough and stayed in this game. There were so many opportunities to let this game go one way away from us, and our guys just would not do it.
The Seahawks took a big loss yesterday in the shape of Will Disley going down with what seems to be an Achilles injury. This is Russell Wilson's favorite target out of the entire receiving corps. Going down with an injury and presumably out for the rest of the season, that's going to make a big impact on this offense, and they're going to have to look to try and find alternate ways to score. Find Tyler Lockett more, maybe use a little bit more DK Metcalf in the receiving game. We'll see how the Seahawks try to adjust to that. And the biggest challenge that the Seahawks have to face this season is going to be the Baltimore Ravens coming to town this week. Lamar Jackson, who looked like an MVP in week 1-4, is coming in with Mark Ingram in the backfield, Hollywood Brown having a breakout rookie season as a wide receiver, and then the defense, you gotta remember that Earl Thomas, Legion of Boom leader, is on the Baltimore Ravens this season, and he's looking to cause some havoc when he comes to Seattle next week. And speaking of Legion of Boom, Seahawk fans, be on the lookout for the San Francisco 49ers. Richard Sherman has that defense in gear. Jimmy Garoppolo is doing enough to get them wins. They're sitting at 5-0 right now, and this could be a tight division race, just like 2013 between the Seahawks and the 49ers. Well, that's all the time Jason allows me, so for the Jason Rants Show, I'm producer Peyton.
He gets 2 minutes and 2 minutes only. By the way, tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. and then again at 5 p.m. on this show, you will get an opportunity to enter to win a pair of tickets to this weekend's upcoming Seahawks game against Baltimore. They're the Ravens.
Yeah.
I Googled that.
Nice. Good job. You prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Good job.
I mean, I don't know anything else about the team, and I always want to say Sounders instead of Seahawks. But still, we're giving away a pair of tickets. Tune in for a code word at 8 a.m. during the Saul Spady Show. Then tune in again at 5 p.m. for a code word on my show, which means you have two opportunities to win a pair of tickets. And these, by the way, these are Peyton's tickets. These are good tickets.
Enjoy them.
Peyton got them as a perk as part of signing up to be a producer here. And I said, hey, we're going to give you Seahawks tickets, all the Seahawks games. He said yes. And then I stole them to give away to you.
Yeah.
So we want them to not go for like be completely wasted. Let's make a deal out of it.
I mean this in the most sincere way possible. Please enjoy those tickets.
You've been in those seats. They're amazing.
Trust me. I would enjoy that game a whole lot.
Enjoy
it for me out there, fans of KTTH.
You don't need to go overboard. Okay, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
This story is absolutely insane. It happened in Dayton, Ohio, where a dude decided to rob a Dollar General store. Guy was in his late 20s. He didn't make off with any cash, actually, after this attempted robbery, because the clerk drew a gun, shot the suspect. He ends up dying at the scene. Now, it is a tragic story. We don't want to see anyone dead. And certainly the clerk didn't want to have to pull that weapon and fire at this individual. But he did what he did because somebody with the intent to do harm came into the store. Now, rather remarkably, where the story goes off the rails is the family of the dead suspect. They're mad that the store clerk had a gun. Now, people mourn in completely different ways. And generally, I step back and let people mourn how they are because I don't know what it is they're going through. I've never had to experience someone of mine, a friend of mine, or a family member of mine be shot to death. Never had to deal with that. They have. We should give them some deference. However, when the message becomes legitimately crazy and unreasonable and even dangerous, then we all need to kind of step in and say, no, you're going a little bit too far. Now, we don't normally play full packages, but I'm going to. Unfortunately, the only one we were able to find was from a video of a video, so the audio is a little bit weaker than normal. But listen to this.
Matters in your own hand and bring a gun to work for safety, period. These siblings are furious. Their brother, who police say was an armed robber, was gunned down by a store clerk. The pair acknowledges that he was wrong for Roosevelt Rackley to try and rob the Dollar General on North Gettysburg Avenue, but they say the clerk shouldn't have had a gun at work. Rochelle and Juan Rackley say their younger brother, Roosevelt Rackley, was the second of 10 siblings killed by gunfire.
I still don't believe.
Second of their siblings to die by gunfire.
Like, at the end of the day, I don't believe my brother is dead. It ain't kicked in yet.
And they're furious about how it happened.
At the end of the day, that's not right.
Police say a Dollar General clerk shot and killed 23-year-old Roosevelt, who showed a gun and demanded cash Wednesday.
Witnesses indicated that the weapon was brandished and pointed at employees.
The siblings recognize their brother's wrongdoing.
Uh-huh. He got some responsibility.
Whoa, no. He's got some responsibility. He brought a gun to the dollar store, pulled the gun, aimed it at someone, and he's only got some responsibility. Okay, please continue.
Siblings recognize their brother's wrongdoing.
He got some responsibility, but not all.
But they say that still doesn't warrant the clerk's actions.
Right and wrong is wrong. That was wrong for that clerk to shoot my brother in the chest. Yes, he's robbing y'all. Oh, well.
Oh, well, that's the attitude that resulted in her brother being shot and killed. Oh, well, I just wanted to rob the store. Oh, well, it's not your money. Oh, well.
Call the police. That's what y'all supposed to do. Y'all not supposed to take matters in your own hands. If that's the case, I'll take matters in my own hands.
Police say the clerk was legally allowed to have the gun. Meanwhile, officers are looking into the possibility Rapley may have been involved in several other commercial robberies.
Oh, you don't say. He has a history of this kind of thing. How weird. This is the kind of stuff that goes viral because it's so out there. And yet there are people who legitimately believe this line of thinking. The idea that it's not your money to protect. Why would you bring a gun to work? This is why he brought a gun to work. This is literally why the clerk decided to have a gun at their disposal. Because scumbags, thieves, go into their store with the intent of doing damage. When you pull out a gun, the intent is to do damage. That's how it's going to be taken 100% of the time. When you decide to break the law, pull out a weapon, the person with whom you're pulling the weapon to, they're going to judge you as a threat. And they will want to kill you before you kill them. This is 100% the responsibility of the thief who decided to go into that store and try to steal from that clerk, who decided to pull a gun on that clerk. I get that they're mourning. This is an inappropriate way to mourn. I'm not going to have the victim here, the clerk, a legitimate victim. I'm not going to have them feel any worse than they already do, knowing that they ended up taking someone's life because of some stupid report on a television station. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. Send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. You can even text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link so you can watch this entire show, at least for this hour, live on our video feed. Text the keyword video to 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. If you watch the show SpongeBob SquarePants, or if your kids watch it and enjoy it, I hope you know they're dangerous racists. Your kids are racist if they enjoy this.
I realize there's a lot of young people on the go these days. They don't have time to sit down and eat. They're too busy out on the open road, living their dreams.
Racist.
I used to have a dream.
Yeah, I used supposed to have a kidney stone. Everything passes eventually.
I know. We can act like plants. Photosynthesis.
I have to apologize for playing that entire clip through, because that's white supremacy on display and white power and white privilege. We'll throw that in there,
How
too.
How dare you support that?
You pulled the audio clip. You didn't bleep out any of that white nationalist propaganda.
Should I have added...
Shame on you!
Should I have added beeps in there?
Probably. We probably should not have played it, because I didn't want to trigger a University of Washington professor. Her name is Holly Barker. She does not like SpongeBob SquarePants, this fictional underwater animated creature that she believes represents violence and racism. This is the latest effort of hypersensitive, partisan, unhinged lunatics trying to ultimately censor pop culture and pretty much ruin everything, because that's what they do. These are people who look for a reason to be upset. She believes that there's something insidious going on here. She wrote a piece that is in the Contemporary Pacific, a journal of island affairs. And in it, she takes on SpongeBob. She says, SpongeBob SquarePants and his friends play a role in normalizing the settler colonial takings of indigenous lands while erasing the ancestral Bikinian people from their non-fictional homeland. Did you realize that that's what SpongeBob was doing? Oh my gosh. So SpongeBob lives in Bikini Bottom on the floor of the Pacific Ocean. Now, this place does not exist as it does in this cartoon, because it is a cartoon. The show's characters do not exist. They're not real. The businesses, for example, Krusty Krab, the premier restaurant, Zagat rated and everything, doesn't actually exist at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. But this area is apparently based around Bikini Atoll in the Marshall Islands, where American military personnel displaced the native inhabitants of this region to conduct nuclear testing. It's a history that is real. It's a history, frankly, that's really interesting. But it's a history that Professor Barker uses to declare this cartoon is, quote, it quote, desensitized viewers to the violence and whitewashes U.S. military rampages on the islands in the history and narrative of Bikini. The fact that SpongeBob SquarePants, again, fictional character, the fact that he lives in this area shows him, quote, this is again coming from the piece and the abstract, shows him, quote, not caring about the detonation of nuclear bombs. She calls the colonization racist and violent. Now, there's a write-up also in Fox News where Barker apparently acknowledges that the SpongeBob creators didn't intend to create a show about colonization. But then she goes on to say, quote, Bikini Bottom and Bikini Atoll were not the writers for the taking. So thus, this is cultural appropriation. She claims that because of these themes, children have, quote, become acculturated to an ideology that includes the U.S. character SpongeBob residing on another people's homeland. We should be uncomfortable with a hamburger-loving American community's occupation of Bikini's lagoon and the ways that it erodes every aspect of sovereignty. She also complains that there are too many male characters and not enough female characters. Okay. This is a purposefully unhinged view of the cartoon, right? There's nothing actually here. There's no story here. This is someone that's trying to find something to complain about to justify her salary at the University of Washington, because you need to publish stuff, right? You need to be able to put out these papers and say, hey, did you know I was published in this journal? And that's all that this is. Presumably, in this case, a journal that has a very low bar to publish their hot takes, because there's nothing academic about it. Yes, it's written in an academic way, but it doesn't actually make it academic. It makes it almost a parody of itself. Now, the funny thing is, she could have very reasonably used the show as a jumping off point to say, you know what? Did you know that SpongeBob SquarePants was actually based on this real place? that has a painful and traumatic history for a lot of people. Let's learn a little bit more about it. Like, that, I think, is a reasonable approach. And I think, actually, that would be really interesting. Weirdly, she's done that before in the past. There was a Burke Museum blog post from her about that very thing. But I'm presuming that it wasn't woke enough, that it wasn't good enough to get put into an academic paper. So she decided, let me up the social justice warrior nonsense. Let me really lean in and embrace that. I'll get it published. It'll get a whole bunch of coverage on Fox. I think I'm actually going to be on Tucker Carlson this week talking about this.
Ooh,
just throwing that out
there. Look at that.
So thank you very much, Holly Barker. But that's what I have to assume was the thinking behind this, because you're not learning anything, because this will immediately be dismissed as crazy. And it should be. And that is a disservice to the history that we should be learning. I don't know if a kid needs to know this specific thing. The funny thing is, this whole idea that kids are learning this, that it's okay to colonize. No, they're not. Because no kid knows that this is a real place, that it's based on a real place. No kid looks at this and says, oh, well, you know what? Because I kind of had a passing knowledge of the history of this particular region, the Marshall Islands, where nuclear testing was done and it was made inhospitable to the natives, and now they have to live somewhere else, and colonialization. Like, they're not having those internal dialogues. They're seeing a show. And you could have turned this, Professor Barker, into a reasonable discussion of history. But instead, she didn't. Instead, she leaned into the crazy. And as a result, we're just going to swat it away as just that, craziness. Craziness that's not deserving of our attention. We live in a world which we have access to pretty much every piece of information, right? Anything that's published in the world, for the most part, you can find with a few contractions of a finger, just typing on your keyboard and finding it. Why would anyone want to sit and read something like this? And I ask that seriously. If this is someone who takes herself seriously, which presumably she does, and she thinks she has a perspective that needs to be heard, was there no better way than to go after SpongeBob SquarePants? She is a principal lecturer over at the Department of Anthropology over at the University of Washington. The reason why I say that is because she's currently teaching. She teaches something called Special Problems in Anthropology. Something tells me she does not consider herself a special problem in anthropology, but I would like to teach that course, and I'll come up with a syllabus around it. You should know this, because if you have a kid who goes to the University of Washington, understand your kid should not take any classes from her, because you're wasting tuition money. She should not be taken seriously as a result of this. And I'm sick and tired of pretending that because a professor holds a position and publishes something in some journal no one has ever heard of, but it sounds really progressive and academic, I'm sick and tired of treating that person as someone who should be taken seriously. No longer can we take someone seriously simply because they happen to be a teacher at a school, a professor or a lecturer or whatever. We automatically assume, because they hold that position, that, oh, wow, they're really smart. These are the kings of intellectuals. This is someone who, when they speak, you better listen because they are learned. No. Not anymore. I ask this honestly. What conversation does this legitimately start? I'm presuming she believed that she now will start a conversation about colonialization and the natives of this region. No. No one is having that conversation. I spent more time Googling the world of SpongeBob, which, by the way, there is a lot of debate as to whether or not the population is 569 or 2 million based upon a wiki article that I read.
Yeah, it fluctuates. But
it really does.
This is an article that seems like it was written by Patrick Starr and not a professor.
The Starr character.
Yeah.
His buddy.
Yeah.
Patrick. I think part of the problem is, and this is a me problem, although I would argue she's part of this issue, this professor. Because it's in an academic paper, I think some of us not just assume it's smart, but try to parse through what it is she's saying and why. And maybe we should stop doing that. Maybe I should need to follow my own rules, because it's just a crazy person talking. And let's stop giving crazy people so much time and so much attention, except for if they book me on Tucker to talk about this. Then I'll happily give them 3 minutes and 17 seconds worth of attention.
Yeah, why wouldn't you? You're loving this. This is right up your alley.
It is good for my career.
Oh, because
I got a lot to say. And by the way, if you want to contribute a joke that maybe I can work into the Fox News hit if they end up fully booked, they just asked me what my schedule is like, so I don't know if I'm going to do it. Write me the joke, because I don't watch SpongeBob SquarePants.
Do you want me to make a reference?
Yeah, some kind of reference that will make sense to people who don't watch it, but it's a knowing reference. Anyone can figure out what it is we're doing.
Ask if mayonnaise is an instrument.
I don't think anyone will know that.
That is the top quote from SpongeBob.
Is mayonnaise an instrument?
It's the greatest scene of all time.
Mayonnaise is white. White supremacy. That's what this show stands for.
Is mayonnaise an instrument?
Oh, my God. I'll try to work that in. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. If you text the keyword of video to 1-800-465-877, I'll send you a link so you can watch a streaming video feed of this show for the next 30 minutes or so. If we get up to 50 people at once, I will continue in the 4 o'clock hour. 1-800-465-877. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Really do appreciate you tuning in, mostly because it is funny. When I find hacks on Twitter going after their political opponents, I always like to try to shine a spotlight on their hypocrisy. And boy, is there a giant spotlight to be put on a group of blue check marks on Twitter, and one who isn't important enough to have a blue check mark, because there was a debate last week in Seattle between incumbent council member Lisa Herbold, who is so bad for the city, and her opponent, Phil Tavel, who we like. They started to level what seemed like a coordinated social media campaign against Phil Tavel for having a history of some traffic infractions, some tickets. And those attacks extended into the weekend, which got me looking deeper into Lisa Herbold's background. And I found out she has a much worse history, including speeding through a school crosswalk, driving on a suspended or revoked license, illegally parking in a handicapped spot. And what was fascinating about all of this, the people who were hitting Tavel for some stuff hit him for stuff that Lisa Herbold did. Heather Weiner is a political consultant. She's a Herbold supporter. She doesn't work for a campaign. She doesn't like me. She went on a tweet storm going after Phil Tavel. And those tweets were picked up by progressive activists because they want to help Lisa Herbold keep control of her seat. They like what she's doing. She's doing an awful job. Heather Weiner, I'm told, was passing around opposition research against Tavel to local media outlets. I haven't seen any media outlet pick it up, at least not yet. And so I guess Weiner decided to do it herself. It's a weird strategy for her to get involved in. Because when I looked it up, Lisa Herbold has been charged with at least 26 driving infractions since 1992. Much more than what they put out against Tavel. Some incredibly dangerous. She was once charged with speeding through a school crosswalk. The court lists a finding of committed on the case, meaning she committed the infraction of speeding through a school cross zone. She ended up paying $229. And it's not her only speeding ticket. She's got a whole bunch. Now, when Heather Weiner, this consultant, posted her onslaught of criticisms against Tavel, a whole bunch of the anti-car crowd jumped in, all saying reckless driving is clearly something that would disqualify someone from consideration for your vote. Don't vote for Phil Tavel because he once got a speeding ticket. They are noticeably silent as it relates to me putting out this information about Lisa Herbold. In fact, some of them are pissed off. They're mad that I'm calling her out. Some people are saying, oh, look at that. Phil Tavel got his bullies in right-wing radio to go ahead and attack Lisa Herbold. These are the same people who are upset with Phil Tavel. They're now upset that I'm using the exact same strategy against them. By the way, not only her only tickets. I've got the big list. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-877. I'll send you a link to this. You can go through it with me. She's got a history of driving on a suspended or revoked license, parking in a spot marked disabled, seatbelt-related tickets, at least three of them, improperly stopping at a stop sign, driving without a license, at least three individual times. Now, I reached out to the Lisa Herbold campaign, trying to get a sense of whether or not they think this is relevant. And instead of directly answering, it was just a very, very snarky response mocking Phil Tavel. She calls him out for laughing at his record of owing $1,000 in unpaid tickets. And this is a direct quote from her campaign manager, quote, since that amount would keep most working people up at night. Because, you see, Lisa Herbold cares about working people. And she wants to pretend that Phil Tavel is this rich millionaire dude, billionaire maybe, $1,000, he doesn't care, but you and me, it really matters. No mention in the statement of the white privilege, to use their term, of Lisa Herbold, because she ignores traffic laws and seems to be easily able to pay not $1,000 in unpaid tickets. She paid $1,600 worth of ticket fines that would keep most working people up at night. Just want to throw that in there with a little bit of a jab. The campaign also said, quote, it's not about being perfect. I've owed money before, too. She does. We're going to get into that later on in the week. But accountability matters. It's important to me to take responsibility. She doesn't take any responsibility in that statement whatsoever. Phil Tavel paid off the tickets that he owed. It was about $1,000. Now, here's the kicker in all of this. I don't care about either of their records. I don't care that Lisa Herbold is a scofflaw. I don't care that Lisa Herbold is a dangerous driver. I honestly don't care. I'm grateful that no one was run over by her horrible driving, speeding through a school crosswalk, because obviously that could have ended poorly, but it didn't. I don't think any tickets will disqualify any candidate, nor it should not. I don't care that Phil Tavel has tickets. I don't care that Lisa Herbold has tickets. What I do care about is this nonsense attacks against people who are your opponents using opposition research because you want to smear the person because you're that desperate. And if you're going to go after Phil Tavel, maybe make sure you don't have a history of the exact type of misconduct that, in my view, is way worse. Have some sort of consistency. You've been listening to The Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH.